This is Paul Siegel. You're listening to Wandering DMs. Wandering DMs is broadcast live at 1 p.m. Eastern on twitch.tv/wanderingdms and youtube.com/wanderingdms/live. And now, on with the show. Hi everyone, welcome to Wandering DMs. I'm Paul.
And I'm Dan. On today's episode of Wandering DMs, we're going to be talking about virtual HelgaCon 2020. So HelgaCon being the house con of about 25 people or so that Paul has hosted for, this would have been, what, year 15? Am I right? Year 15?
13. Lucky number 13.
13, right. Yeah. Okay, gotcha. Yeah. So normally, for first part of April, we get together with our best friends, in Massachusetts for a weekend of all wall to wall gaming for 3 or 4 days. And, like everything else in all of our lives, it got disrupted this year. Yep. So the best we could do is, kind of very quickly, put some games online and do that virtually. So once again, Paul and I know a whole heck of a lot more about streaming and playing D&D online than we did just 7 days ago.
Yep.
So let's hash that out and see if we can share our newfound knowledge of how that works in different contexts.
Yeah, we should cover a couple of different things here, Dan. I was thinking of both the tech stuff that we learned and then the procedure around running an individual game, and then also about running a virtual convention, a larger, you know, multi-day thing with many games. I'm not going to claim to be any kind of expert on that. I've done it now once.
Yeah,
have some theories, but it's worth going over, I think.
I totally agree. And there are other people, and maybe we're going to talk about tabletop events as part of this conversation.
Yeah.
Who's going to be doing that for the first time in May, and we're all learning for the first time. So maybe this will help some folks queuing up for that.
Yeah, hope so.
Yeah.
Maybe we just go through it linearly of what we did. So when all this hit and I realized that we weren't going to be able to do the live event, of course, the first thing I did was talk to the owners of the house we rent. They were very gracious. And so we've delayed to who knows when, maybe all the way out for a year, maybe less if we can, the actual in-person event. And so I messaged that to all our attendees, and some of them came back and said, well, can we do something online on the same weekend? And I thought, yeah, why not? That would be great. So the first thing I did is I created a Discord server because I knew it was going to need some kind of communication channel that was opt-in, right, that people could join in and sort of discuss the hows and wherefores, because, frankly, there's a lot of stuff, like a lot of the prep we had done for the physical location I knew wasn't going to translate.
Yeah.
There are even games I was intending to run that I knew I couldn't do online or didn't want to do online. For example, I run very prop-heavy Cthulhu games.
Right.
I don't want to try and do that online. That half the fun is gone when I can't bring out the props.
Totally. Yeah.
So the interesting thing then I realized the limiter for the number of people I could invite to this has always been the size of the house. So as that kind of progressed, as time elapsed, and I realized, like, oh, I could just dump more people in. Let's encourage more people to show up, because one of the things I was really worried about was the scheduling of it. When we're all on site, we have a fairly rigid, you know, there's a morning game, there's an afternoon game, there's an evening game, and there's sort of these rigid time slots of when games happen. And I thought we might need a little more flexibility.
Sure.
Given that I don't know what everyone's situation is, right? Like some folks have kids who maybe they don't want to try to be gaming while their kids are running around, and maybe they want to play later in the night. Maybe other folks it's easier for them to get up in the morning. So I thought something a little more flexible might be in order. Perhaps this was a mistake. I don't know.
Okay. But, all right. Okay. That would be surprising to me, because I like the needing to be flexible is, I think, part of something that all of us are doing. It's exactly what we're having to do for my teaching gig. So that would be surprising, but yeah.
Well, so here's the outcome that I'm kind of analyzing now that I'm not sure I'm not sure whether to qualify this as success or failure or something in between. We ended up with about 38 people on the Discord channel. which okay. is we usually get like 20 to 24 in the house, right? So it's right. a good number of more people. A lot of people kept showing up, and I thought, oh, this is spreading. This is, okay. you know, this is going to be a big thing. It was my impression as I'm watching people join and join the Discord. And then on the Discord, one of the things I did is I created a separate channel where I said, here's where we'll talk about what games we're considering playing. And then once, you know, you feel it sounds like people kind of want to play your game, we created a shared Google spreadsheet where I just put a very manual sign-up sheet. List your game, list the number of players you want. Everyone has write access to it, so you can just pop in there and drop your name on the list. I'm going to play this game.
Great.
We ended up with about 6 games running, and none of the games I played had more than like 5 players in them.
Okay. Okay.
Which is all very small compared to the usual HelgaCon, where we have 20-something, 20 to 24 people in the house, and we run about 15 to 18 mm-hmm. games.
Yep,
and many of the games are, some of the games are like 10 or 12 people in a game.
Right.
So it just seemed like a lot less gaming for so many more people.
Okay, yeah.
And here's my theory on that. Here's my theory on that. That's part, I think, of the magic of having a convention, whether it's a big convention where everyone goes to a hotel or a small one that you hold in a rental house, is that everyone's kind of put their lives on hold and gone to a new location.
Yeah.
And therefore, they're very focused on the activity. There's nothing to do at HelgaCon but play games, right? Yeah. You're not going to do other stuff, right? The people who have kids got sitters so that they could come. The people who are usually... sleep till noon. They're in a noisy house. They're going to get woken up, and they're going, oh, I guess I'll play a 9 a.m. game, right?
Right.
When everyone's at home calling in, you know, it's much easier, I think, to just get distracted or pulled away into the normal, you know, life stuff of what's around you in the house. And so maybe you're less inclined to go all in and just play, games all weekend.
Right. I will say that, I mean, so obviously this particular instance was, you know, happened kind of on an emergency basis.
That's true.
And you guys pulled it together with only about a week to go, really. So I actually didn't, you know, myself didn't game with the people that I usually do during HelgaCon. I did do gaming this weekend, but it wasn't with the folks that I normally, you know, and I'm missing that quite a bit. Maybe in this particular case, the need to quickly pivot and adjust, really our games that we were planning on running in person, most of them wouldn't work online, and you would have to do more totally different preparation to make that happen.
You know, that's a really good point. I played in one game where at the end of the game, I overheard one player say, "Wow, that worked way better over the internet than I thought it would. Maybe I will run a game this way."
Yeah.
Right. So I think there's some hesitation from folks who think like it's not going to work or can't imagine how it would work.
Right.
Who need to see it.
Right. And there's probably a bit of a technical barrier of like, am I going to be able to participate, play? Do I have the tech equipment on my end? That kind of thing. Yep. Might be a factor. However, I will say that, I mean, so I was, you know, I will confess that in one of my games this weekend, like I actually did find myself at one point pulling up a web browser and checking an unrelated website, which is something that, you know, when people check phones at a gaming table is a pretty bad breach of etiquette, all things considered. And I was like, oh, crap, here I am doing it myself because it's invisible and I'm not fully, totally mentally present for what's happening. So I will confess I did have a small dash of that in my own mouth this weekend. I'm embarrassed about.
I had another player who told me about how when he's at HelgaCon, you know, he's going to get up for the 9 a.m. game because what else is there to do? And that's what he's invested, right? He showed up. He's there to play the games.
Yeah.
And so he's like, oh, I'm definitely going to get up at 9 a.m. to play a game. Yeah. When he's at home, He's a night owl, and he's like, normally I'm not getting up till 10, 11 in the morning.
Yeah, yeah.
And so he said, I'm home, right? I'm home. I'm here. I'm with my kids and my family. I just fall back into those habits. And so there's just no way for a virtual convention that he was going to get up for a 9 a.m. game.
Yeah. If I wasn't part of this conversation, I would have thought that that would have been like me saying that. and so William there in the chat is saying he said the same thing on family vacations and like academic conferences, right? Same thing for me. It's like I'm there, totally focused on that. I don't see news. I don't see, you know, outside stuff. I'm not communicating with family members and, you know, totally in a different, you know, and frankly, more energized, way more focused mindset in those kinds of situations. And that's definitely a loss when we can't get together to totally stew ourselves in the experience.
Yeah. Yeah. It's, yeah, it's interesting, right? And I started, the funny thing is I started going down this mental road talking with my wife, Jen, about how would you do that in this state that we're in? How would you run a virtual convention where you can guarantee that all your participants are focused in, like, yeah. And I can't come up with anything good, right? Like, stupid yeah. ideas are entering my head yeah. of, like, you still go to a hotel, but no one leaves their hotel room. Like,
right.
It doesn't really work.
You know, you know, an idea at school has been that I've personally resisted is going around. They do have these browser lockdown technologies, right, for academic testing. So you could send around a browser lockdown and prevent anybody from going anyplace else except that particular event that week.
It feels all a bit aggressive, right? Like, this is yeah. not, we're not inventing a fun activity.
It's a terrible
come
idea.
Join us
it's
in
a terrible idea, but people have been floating it lately, so I'm like,
oh, jeez.
Like, actually infect their systems with malware so
God.
They can't do anything else that weekend.
No, it's a terrible idea. But then, like, I can imagine doing it for myself, right? Like, if I'm going to go to an online convention, maybe I'm going to do something really crazy, like, you know, bring a bunch of hardware into one room and put a sleeping bag on the floor or something, right? And to be like, this is my convention. It's this room. And if I leave, right, like, enter that mental space. They say you're supposed to do this for home working, too, right? It's sort of like, set up your office space. When you're in your office space, you work, and then yeah. leave your office space and don't, you know, yeah. don't let life and work kind of commingle in the actual small physical location. So I could do that, right? I have enough space in my house. Like, I could set up, like, this room is the convention. But I'm certainly not going to, like, somehow make everyone who attends do that, right?
Really commendably hardcore. It's really commendably hardcore, and I really respect you for even having the idea. That's great. Put up a tent. Put up one of the, put up, like, a kid's tent in your room.
Yeah. So... So I don't know. You know, maybe with tabletop events, they're doing their Con of Champions, which I highly recommend everyone check out.
Right.
Or even if you're willing to donate to buy a badge, they have badge levels from like $2 to $1,000, right? They have all these different levels of badges.
Right.
And the whole point is it's a fundraiser to save that company. And I think that the local convention scene, not just our local convention scene, but the local convention scene, because I think a lot of small conventions across the country use it, is at risk of losing a major resource. So please, if you can, go help them out.
Let me look at this. That's a really good point. Let me look at this this chat item from Idle there. Point out your table limit is a lot lower. That's a really good point. You know, and there might be so obviously some of us are used to you know, running really big tables, like, you know, Paul and I have mm-hmm. seen someone run 25, 27 at a table, and I've run 12 to 14. You both have, in this situation, you both have technical limitations of maybe the software doesn't support more than a particular number. As you're saying, just, you know, personal relationship issues. Like, I was finding my game on Friday, like, I felt a lot... Like, as we were going around, like, for combat, I did feel a little bit more disconnected when someone else was going through actions. And certainly, like, normally at a table, you can actually at least have body language or eye-to-eye contact between two people that aren't immediately taking actions action sequence.
You could even have...
And if we do that online, it's more disruptive.
Yeah. Yeah, you could, as we just observed, as I tried to break in there, right? You could even have, you know, in a regular table game, you can have a small, quiet aside with someone, right?
Yes.
And the technology isn't there yet. Maybe it's coming, I don't know. But it isn't there yet to support that sort of thing, right? So we saw this at the very beginning of our convention. One of the things I did is, as we were starting up, and as we, like, a couple days before, I thought, oh, you know, sign-up's really low. There's very few games being run. And I thought maybe people are just going to, you know, do it all super last minute, because I've been billing it as this casual, like, just drop in when you can and we'll, you know, play some games. So I thought, maybe some people aren't going to actually sign up for stuff until, like, the day of.
Gotcha. Yeah.
So I thought, let's kick it off then. So we started on Friday night. I scheduled a 6 o'clock, 1 hour call of just like, let's like grab your dinner, come sit in front of the computer, yeah. You know, eat your food or have a drink and just chit chat with everybody who's going to be participating in the weekend as this general kickoff. And we did that over Skype. I chose Skype because, you know, we are big fans of Skype here. We use it for our show. And it's one of the two pieces of software, video chat software I know of, it and Zoom, that will allow you to pre-schedule a thing and pass around a link. Right, so I could post a link and say, here's the link for the 6 o'clock call, everybody come. And that's weird, right? Like, when you have, I don't know how many people we had on that, maybe a dozen, maybe?
Something like that, 10-ish. I feel like 10-ish.
Yeah, and that, with that many people trying to, like, have a casual, mingly conversation is actually difficult because only one person can talk at a time.
Yeah, you're right. You're right.
And so that is a little odd. It's a little weird.
You're right. I'm going to say I'm glad we did that, right? So again, those are like I have a bunch of friends at HelgaCon who are really good friends of mine who I only see once a year.
Mm-hmm.
And you know, and obviously there were people that couldn't join in, and I missed them terribly too. But I'm really glad we did that because I, you know, it allowed me to see people are doing okay in their homes and stuff like that. So
I agree.
It was nice, but very different. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. I agree. It was good. And I would recommend anyone who's running a virtual con do that. I think it's very valuable. I think, you know, again, the size is going to be your major limiter. And now I'm really looking to, like, as this goes on, I don't know how long we're all stuck in our houses for, but, you know, I keep saying, you know, necessity is a mother of invention. So I'm hoping some video chat system is going to come out that allows for, like, virtual mingling, right? That allows a big group to all be on one video chat, but then to kind of, like, easily form and small subchats and then break away from them.
You know, it's funny because actually Collaborate does actually have that sort of
interesting.
You know, and again, Collaborate's this academic thing built into the Blackboard learning management system. And I'm kind of actually the last 5 minutes I'm expecting somebody to pop in chat and tell us about one of the systems that has what we're talking about. And so, you know, Collaborate, and I'm sure many of these systems probably you can send private chat messages to someone out of channel. I'm assuming on Collaborate you can do that. You can send private chat messages, and then the controller actually can, they call it breakout groups for what it's worth, can assign people into sub channels for a breakout conversation, which is fairly common in some academic circles, and then come back as a unified group. So so it's not impossible, nor as we would know it would not be.
That's, I mean, certainly the ability to have, like, text chat, private text chat within a larger video chat, I think most of the software, you know, does. I know Skype and Zoom all support that. But yeah, what I'm really looking for is a group to be able to say, well, I'm going to take our video chat, I'm going to take our video and audio channels over here for a second to do a quick blah, 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 and then come back. And I get the breakout thing. Like, that seems very much like stuff I've seen in the corporate world where you're going to have a big conference and then we're going to do a big presentation. Now we're going to go into breakout groups.
Right, right.
That feels just a little more formal, though, than what I'm looking for.
I hear that. Yeah, right? I hear that. I get that.
Yeah. Okay, let's talk a little bit about then how the technology worked for us. Because I can talk about, I ran two games, played in one. Two of the games were Fiasco, and both run with slightly different tech, so that's interesting. One of them I ran, one of them I played in.
So you had a game Friday at 7, so let's talk about that.
Right. Well, let me start by going back and saying that a little bit of the love affair with Skype is dead after that call for me.
Okay.
With that many people on a Skype call, I was starting to finally see what a lot of the stuff I think people complain about Skype with. I had some of the callers had very pixelated screens. I always seem to have at least one caller who was reduced just to their icon, although other people said they could see their video.
Yeah.
So just, it wasn't the best experience for me. And so it's unfortunate because Skype, as you know, is the only software that supports raw NDI connections per caller, which I really like for the purposes of streaming.
Yep, yep.
But anyway, that aside, I then ran a fiasco game for myself and five players. We have a friend who runs Fiasco all the time, addictively, at every convention we go to. And she ran a game of that Saturday night that I played in. So I've played a lot of Fiasco, but I've never been responsible for running it before.
Okay.
But by the text, it definitely bills itself as GM-less, right? It's there's no GM, everybody can play. And so that's the experience I was looking for, was I'll help people with the rules, but I expect to be a full player.
Gotcha, gotcha.
And so six of us, we ended up on a Zoom call. Here's the thing. It seems that only certain video chat software actually supports full grid view, by which I mean an ability to see the video feed of every participant in a big kind of Brady Bunch grid.
Okay.
Right. Yeah. The only software I'm aware of that supports that full grid view is Zoom and Discord.
Yeah.
Which is interesting. Yep. And Discord is awkward. I had it in my head to try and use Discord, but Discord video chat only works with friends and DMing. So you can't take a Discord channel where everybody's already connected and say, start a video call here. Mm-hmm. I don't know why not. That seems obvious to me.
Agreed.
But you can't. Instead, you have to friend all the people in the channel and then start a private video chat with them, which is... why? I hate that hurdle. Anyway, so that's interesting because a lot of people want that view. And I know things like Google Meet or Skype have a quote-unquote grid view, but all it does is show a 2x2 grid, and then you only get to see four participants, and then it will flip-flop who's in the grid and who's not in the grid based on who's spoken recently.
I agree that, you know, with you and I, with the show, I mean, we've actually never had more than three feeds at a time, right? So it's either always been you and me, or you and me and one guest, or you know, one time we had a guest, like, just sitting next to you physically.
Yep.
So we've never had more than three feeds. So I got to admit, in that Friday call, that was the most people that I've seen in Skype, and it was kind of surprising. I also thought it was surprising that you couldn't just see everybody all at once. So I do see that as a limitation.
Yeah, now. I didn't like it. I didn't like it. That was a hurdle for us. So we switched to Zoom for our Fiasco game, and then I was also using Roll20, and I found a site where somebody showed how to set up Fiasco dice for use in Roll20.
Okay.
That worked actually very well for the space that you need for Fiasco. What you want is a pool of D6s that you roll, and then they stay in play as permanent tokens, and they get moved around, and then everybody has their own little group of D6s that they're going to roll separately. That stuff all worked pretty well.
Gotcha.
And then also you draw on the table a bunch, and you draw like lines between players. These two players have a sibling relationship, and these two players have an employee-boss relationship or whatever.
Right.
And so that kind of tracking was really nice for Roll20. But I'm also very used to, as a software developer, I'm used to having two monitors all the time. Not everyone has that. You and I, Dan, were just discussing this. And so if you can't put your video chat on one monitor and your Roll20 on another monitor, screen real estate starts to become a real issue.
Yeah.
And unfortunately, Roll20 has its own built-in video chat, but it's terrible. I've tried to use it. It's not good.
Okay.
I have a lot of, like, the config is very difficult. I've had a lot of trouble just getting it to use the camera I want it to use. Even when it does, the video has been choppy.
Gotcha.
So I'd much rather have, like, Zoom and Roll20 side by side. But, again, then, you know, you get into the screen real estate problem.
Yeah. Yep, yep. True.
So the second game of Fiasco that I played in was also done in Zoom. And in this case...
I'm going to step in with my Friday 8 o'clock game. Is that okay?
Sure. Yeah, yeah, yeah. Okay. Yeah.
So... So you were just talking about, you know, why you weren't, Discord and, what's the other, so you just said two have the grid view and it's Zoom and Discord.
Zoom and Discord. Worth pointing out real quick, as William tells us, you got to have a Zoom license to pull this off. It's not free.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
Yep.
And I will just pitch out there that Zoom has had an avalanche of privacy security problems daily in the last 8 days, I tend to be pretty hypersensitive to that above anybody else that I know.
Yeah. I had heard anecdotally that potentially that it was a lot of rehashing of actually just one article. But
yeah, there was definitely more than one in the last week.
So what did you use?
Okay, so Max from 10 Dead Rats ran. So this was actually a gathering of my regular biweekly group here in Brooklyn that we haven't been able to get together for about a month and a half. So I was like really kind of relieved to see all those guys again that we haven't been able to get together. So Max from 10 Dead Rats ran a game of Troika for the first time on Discord. So that was the first time I have ever played Troika, and it's the first time I've ever played on Discord. So it was in addition to like just seeing my friends again, it was like really informative for that. And we totally ran into the issue you just said about needing to individually friend everybody that's going to be on the video.
Yep.
The game was delayed by a couple seconds because I was the last person to figure out the interface to find and accept the friend request. Right. Yep. I was totally that guy. Like 15 seconds when I realized that was an issue.
Yep.
So we totally had to do that, and we totally used the Discord video system. And I think we've heard some complaints about the Discord video system, and we were having some AV issues the whole session. People were saying that my microphone voice was sounding robotic the whole time, which is not something we usually have on like this show. Isn't like part of my setup it doesn't output that normally.
I've seen that when you and I experimented with Discord for the show.
Yeah, right.
I also saw that problem. So that's interesting.
Right. And you know, I think I have at this point I have all my output encodings, bit rates all matching, so it's okay. Now I don't know what the problem would be.
That's weird.
I guess that's a good point, actually. That was when we used Discord. On top of that, we had, you know, some of our members were dropping video, and we had, you know, there was an echo problem, and one person's microphone kept automatically disabling every couple seconds. And so there were a number of issues like that. Now, as far as the game goes, like I kind of like Troika actually for the first time. So, kind of post-apocalyptic-y kind of fantasy, situation, very simple system to learn. Have you ever played that, Paul?
No.
Troika? Okay. Nope. Very simple system to learn. It's, you know, everything's based on 2d6 rolls. So your skills are going to be somewhere between 2 and 12, and you're going to roll two dice to roll below them. And the interesting thing is, you know, that really smacks of how Dave Arneson's original system is totally based on these 2 to 12 ability scores, and you're rolling 2d6 for everything. So weirdly, in 2020, I have this kind of, you know, echo on my palate of what Dave Arneson's original system apparently looked like. Funny. And they have a really, Troika has a really, to me, unique initiative system that I got to say I thought was friggin' hilarious. Is everybody involved in, and so you, in order to replicate the following, we had to get a special piece of software to do this. But in general, at the table, you have a bag of tokens, and everybody in the fight, good guys and bad guys, you throw tokens in the bag, including plus tokens that say end of round. So you shake the bag, start drawing tokens out. And it's very likely you're going to get enemy attacks, end of round. No players took any actions whatsoever. Next round, shake up the bag, enemy attacks, end of round again, right? So that more or less, there were particular people, right, just the way that the randomization went, that went three or four rounds and got no actions whatsoever.
That's weird. That is weird.
Yeah, it's different, and man, to me, I thought that was really hilarious. I mean, I wasn't on the short end of the stick on the action economy, but I thought that was like weirdly hardcore. I mean, we did get, you know, trounced by enemies for a couple rounds because of that. So I actually kind of like that.
Okay,
interesting. Yeah. I did, you know, I got to admit, Discord, does do a grid view. It's not perfect. Like we had an odd number of players, right? We had a total of seven people involved. And for each of us, you know, so it kind of wants to do an N by two grid.
Yeah.
But with an odd number, for each of us, it would pick one apparently random person who would get like a double sized grid. And there's no way to alter that.
Yep.
I mean, because I was hunting, it's like what I really wanted was for the referee to have the big extra slot. I wanted Max on the extra big slot. And there's no way to take control of that. And I thought that was really strange.
That's I'm now totally remembering that, because when we first started doing 10 Dead Rats, I think we did an episode using Discord chat, Discord video chat. And when you have to have it on a monitor and you're scraping, right? Basically, you're saying, you know, take this piece of the output on this monitor to put it here, and et cetera, et cetera. Super annoying when one is randomly big.
Yeah, totally. Boy, that seems like an obvious feature of just like...
Let me specify who I want. Yeah, and that was the feedback from my players, too, is they all wanted me as DM to have the big spot. Yeah. And I was like, all right, I have no control.
Totally. That was wonky and strange to me that they couldn't do that. Of course, there actually is a thing that says, like, make this person the focus, but then they're the only person. You see nobody but them, right?
Yep.
And that wasn't what we wanted either, so.
Nope. Yeah. So what else were you using out of curiosity? Like, how were you rolling dice? What other apps were sharing screen space with Discord? Or was it just Discord?
Nothing. Yeah. Just purely Discord, and we were rolling physical dice.
Yeah, so that's my second fiasco game. We had a Zoom call and that's it. Yeah. And then the DM was taking notes and rolling dice. And what I found myself doing is, like, because you need to know what the different relationships are between all the players. Like, everyone has to know that all the time. And you want to know who has what dice. So I found myself with a legal pad drawing it out and just writing down all the stuff
as we played. Okay.
And then maybe an hour in, I said, screw it. And I just opened up Roll20 and transcribed all my notes into Roll20 just so I could. It was just easier for stuff like moving dice around rather than have to, like, erase a number here and move a number there. I could just drag a D6 from point A to point B.
Gotcha.
And then I shared that link with the other players. I was like, if anybody wants to watch, right? Like, we weren't full on using it as, like, an interactive board that we're all playing with. I was just using it for my personal note-taking, and then I shared it with everybody to say, you can watch my notes, and they found that useful.
Great.
I would still recommend it, honestly.
That's the one you were not running, right?
That's the one I was not running, right. Yeah. Right. So I ended up, nevertheless, with a second Roll20 window open just to keep tabs on that.
Okay.
So I don't know. I think that Roll20 was really good for Fiasco, and I would recommend it. If you have the space for it. But you could totally run it as our DM was running it of everybody keep your own notes, right? You can do it that way. That's fine.
Yep.
It works. It's not the best, but it works.
Similar to when we run games on Tuesday nights, the Beast solo games that you and I run with, we have the character sheet really on paper. It's what we have,
Okay.
What other things did you do, like, on Saturday?
So, Saturday, I ran a game of Dan Collins-style outdoor spoliation. what is that? That is an OD&D game that is essentially a hex crawl done on the outdoor survival board. It's very sandboxy.
You can see as the background on our show, right?
Yep.
The hex crawl below us is the outdoor survival map.
Yeah. So the original D&D rules, of course, tell you to do this. It explicitly says that a copy of Outdoor Survival is in the required equipment to play D&D. It's a really interesting kind of fun way to play, because I think everything you've said about it in the past, I totally experienced of, like, have I overprepared? Have I underprepared? I'm not sure. Is this going to be fun? I have no idea. Right?
It's the most terrifying game to walk into. It's the most terrifying game to walk into all the time because I don't know. It just seems like it has to be a disaster all the time. And most of the time it isn't.
Yeah. So the other thing I was dealing with that game is I felt like I needed a lot of flexibility. Again, because it's very sandbox and the players can really go in a variety of directions, I knew I was going to have to do stuff on the hex board. I knew that we might zoom in to, you know, battles with where I actually want miniatures because there's, right, we might zoom into exploration. I had a system on hand for, like, 2 to 3 room caves if they go into caves.
Right.
We might need to do mass battles where if they're going to assault a castle, I'm going to need to do that.
Right.
excellent. Ash says it's his favorite piece of required equipment after one patient referee. That's fantastic.
Yeah,
agreed. So, So anyway, I knew I needed a lot of different stuff, and I was kind of terrified of setting this all up in Roll20 or a similar virtual tabletop. I was like, this feels like too much. So I had the crazy idea to run it like a live stream and use this very software we're using right now, which is called vMix. There's also an open source similar software called OBS, which stands for something.
Open Broadcasters yeah. Software.
Yeah, there you go.
Open Broadcasting Software.
Right. So basically what I did is I sat in the space that I've built for streaming, not this space, actually, a different one, but I had three different cameras pointed at me. I had one head-on for this. I had one top-down, so you could see the board in front of me, and I had one that was kind of at a three-quarter angle to give you that, like, if there were going to be miniatures on the board, that gives you that nice perspective view of miniatures. Had all that in front of me, so as they're moving around the hex board, I would move their miniature around, and then if they needed to zoom in and go into a minis battle, I actually had a whiteboard, like a small whiteboard next to me that I would then plop on top of that and draw with marker and then put miniatures on and switch to the other view.
Great.
And I had arranged the screen, and this is the nice thing about broadcasting software, right, is we can put the video wherever we want, right?
Yeah.
So I had the whole, like, left-hand half of the screen, basically, the space you see with my face in it right now, that was all board.
Okay.
And then on the right side, we had a small grid of the players. I had five players, but two of them were in the same location, so they were sharing a video feed.
Okay.
So I had a little 2x2 grid in the upper right quadrant, and then the lower right quadrant was a big image of me.
Great.
And then I ran it that way. And everybody rolled their own dice, but I could roll dice right onto my board, and everyone could see them.
Yep.
And it worked really well, honestly. It worked really well. So the other thing is vMix has its own software for importing calls called vMix Call. It only comes with the very expensive versions of vMix.
Yeah.
But we were using that. So then I was, again, able to just hand out links to people and say, open this in your browser, this is the call, and it would direct connect their video feed to my software, and I was able to record it, and the quality was great, and it worked super well, honestly. I posted to Twitter this morning a picture of my view of the setup, which is crazy looking, because you see all these armatures of cameras and lights and crap pointing at me. Unfortunately, I did not have the foresight at the time to take a screen cap of it while it was happening. I totally was in my head to do that. I even meant to ask my players, are you guys okay with me doing a screen cap or recordings of us just for my own records? And then I got whisked away into the game and forgot all about it.
It's very common to do that. You know, I can't tell you how many times I've had some kind of, like, make a recording or document something that happened or time something, and, you know, running a, you know, DMing a game is just, it takes everything. It just takes all your processors and all of your cores. And it's like, I commonly call it the everything game. And it's so hard to have some kind of extra meta thing that you're going to try to record. I've forgotten that so many times.
It's tough. I mean, I like all the tech of streaming. I find that interesting and fascinating. But I kind of wish there were two of me, so one of us could run the tech and one of us could do the DMing. Totally. I don't know which I would choose if I had to choose.
Totally.
But I wish there were two people to do it.
You pick being the talent.
Yeah.
Pick being the talent, I would recommend.
Yeah. Okay.
Now, you doing anything, like, were you switching views? Like, was everything, once, you were switching views?
I was switching views. So that big left-hand view, again, when we were doing hex crawl, was the top-down camera, because that gave you the best view of the map. Gotcha. And then when we went into battles, I would switch to the close-up, perspective view of the miniatures.
I'm amazed you could do that. I mean, actually, I'm really just amazed that you could do that, because that does add an additional level of burden to keep track of that.
That was just a button click on the that was really fairly trivial, actually.
How big were the engagements? How big were the battles that you were getting into in terms of
great. So, number of creatures? In one case, they were in. They had come across a cabin of woodsmen. There were a dozen woodsmen, and they accepted their hospitality and slept there. Yep. And lo and behold, in the middle of the night, the woodsmen turned out to be werewolves.
Yep.
Unfortunately, and so there was a fight there between five PCs and a dozen werewolves in a space that included about three rooms and some outdoor space.
Okay.
So we played that out, and then at the very end, they assaulted an orc encampment, which was one of the castles I had interpreted as an encampment of orcs. Right. They had convinced a nearby lord to send an army with them, so they had 60 men with them.
Great.
And they invaded an orc encampment of 100 orcs.
Great.
And great. And so, of course, I had to break out my Book of War. And I ran a mixed encounter of players with figures that were just one man figures, as well as figures that were, this is 10 orcs and this is 10 crossbowmen and this is 10. Worked really well. So well done, Dan. The
Fantastic.
Book of War meshes into D&D really well.
That is exactly the case. When I was growing up, it was so frustrating to have things not really, to have that baked into the basic D&D rules. To have these big wilderness encounters on the table and then really not have a really great mechanic of making that work right. So that was exactly the problem in the floor of D&D that I was trying to fix for about 20 years there. So I'm super glad that worked for you.
The one thing that I had trouble with that I wasn't sure how to adjudicate properly was we had a frontal assault of 30 footmen bashing into about 50 orcs.
Yeah.
And two or three fighter players wanted to be involved in that.
Gotcha.
And I wasn't sure how to make their involvement interesting and significant in some way. What I ended up having them do was make normal attacks, and based on how many orcs they killed, I would give a bonus to the Book of War roll.
Yep. Okay.
But I wasn't totally satisfied. I feel like there's probably rules for that in Book of War, and I just didn't have time to process it and digest it at the table, so I was winging it.
Yeah, I think something similar happened in my own D&D game a couple months ago, and I think I think I got to the point of it is nice when you let the champions fight each other, right? So like if there's some kind of leader type on the opposing type, kind of just sort of like mangle things so that the champions fight the champions, and even if they're surrounded by other people. And I think I was, like, at the time, I was like, every three rounds of your D&D fight, I'll go back and roll for the mass fight around you or something like that.
Interesting.
And so I think I was going in the direction of, like, for those narrative come-up-on-the-fly D&D games of pretty much, and it actually, they do write it in the original D&D rules, pretty much just arrange it so the champions are always bashing on other champions.
Yeah.
Is the direction I started to step into in the last couple months.
And that eventually happened when they were able. Unfortunately, there was a choke point, and so you had this gate where, you know, two armies were clashing, and the leader of the orcs was back behind. So the players had to get through it to get to the champion. But that was their goal. And basically, I just let them do it. They were like, even though it looks, and this is part of that style of play. We're so far down the rabbit hole here, but part of that style of play is you have to convince your players that like the miniatures are abstract. Right, because you're like this miniature and this miniature look the same size, but this is one person and this is 10 orcs.
Totally.
And so I said, like, you know, there's this big fight. There's this big, you know, 50-100 person fight happening in the gates here. You're just one person. You can just move through. It's fine, right? Yeah, you cut your way through. You fight some guys. It's not like they're not blocking you, right?
Yep.
You're just one person.
Great.
Great. So then they of course beelined to the boss to go fight the boss.
Yeah. See, good. Good. Yeah. I think that tends to make for a pretty good action in that. And what levels were you running, just to be clear?
5 to 7.
Okay, 5 to 7. Yep. That is a little awkward. I do find that level is a little awkward when you get to name level 8, 9, 10, then the numbers work out in an efficient way, and that's that range that's interesting for a D&D play is particularly awkward to interface with 1 to 10 scale mass combat. Yeah. Yeah, but it sounds like that worked really well, which is great.
Yeah.
Cool. So, ironically, so that same day, so I actually, at one point, I was considering participating in that game, and I had to back out because in the afternoon, I was setting up here to stream Saturday night, last night at 8, to stream a dedicated Book of War playtest session between myself, Dan, and disinvited Brooklyn-based artist Isabel Garbani, right? And so so that took about that happened, and it's something I'd wanted to do for quite a while, so I can't tell you how excited I was about that actually. And I mean, you've talked about sometimes, because afterwards I was so excited I couldn't sleep. I could not sleep for hours. I was so happy and I was so thrilled.
That's great.
To be able to share, you know, the feedback that I get from Isabel actually when we play here. And at your, you know, you recommended the setup to make it happen. And again, on Twitter, a couple hours beforehand, I had posted the setup that I had developed with a couple lights and three cameras and a laptop and stuff like that. Worked smashingly well.
Great.
You recommended the framing that I wasn't going to come up with of, you know, major board in the middle and then us two on the bottom, in the bottom corners, you know, literally facing off each other. I was not going to come up with that. It's, you recommend that. It worked perfectly fine.
Sort of classic sports ball setup, right?
Yeah. It worked. You know, and the funny thing is, if we leaned, you know, the funny thing is, if we lean too far out of one of the little corner slots, well, that's exactly the moment that our bodies came into the main thing on top. So it's like we'd stick our hand out of the frame, and the hand would come in the major frame perfectly well, right? So it was completely coherent. And Isabel is so great on camera, and is so competitive. And the funny thing is, she says when growing up in her household, it was not considered acceptable to be competitive. And so she spent her whole life being like, don't be competitive, you know, be nice to everybody at the table. And what we do here allows her to unleash her competitive nature, and we both get really into it. And as the show goes on. It gets, and the funny thing about Book of Wars, if you play a game like that, inevitably it gets more and more energetic and it gets more and more frenzied as the game goes on towards the end. Mm-hmm. And it's one of the things I'm just so happy about that happens with that is you cannot tell, there'll be a turn and you're just super confident that person A is losing and person B is winning. And one round later, it totally flip-flops the other way. And it seems to happen every time we play, like without fail.
Fantastic.
And it's so tense. And, you know, anybody that does, so we have that obviously on YouTube now.
That's great. I'd love to hear Isabel talk about her experience playing it. It's a shame we can't have her on the show.
Well, I'll bring that up next Saturday on the next episode of Dan and Isabel Playtest Book of War and see if she has a reaction to that. I was so excited about that, and it worked really well. And Isabel also helped in on the graphic design, and her visual sense is ahead of mine. And I will say, as the thing started off, right? So we always learn this kind of stuff. The show starts, and we just sit quietly for about 15 minutes, choosing our armies on paper. And the next time we stream it, we'll probably just jump into the point where we've actually selected our armies.
Mm-hmm.
But after that, things are moving, and it was really exciting. Again, I'm working on a second edition of Book of War. It did take me, I guess, technically 20 years to write the first version. And I've been working on a draft of the second version for about 5 years. So the joke is that I'm almost irresponsibly going too fast this time. Someone asked on YouTube for the current rules that I'm using. Those will actually be on my blog tomorrow morning, Monday morning. And that show is on YouTube, and we had a really good time, and I think it worked.
William says that he understands you change the rules on people.
Not intentionally to my benefit. It has, you know, over 5 years, things did get tuned.
Yeah.
I think there is maybe a difference of opinion during the stream, maybe.
Oh, that's
but,
great.
But that's, I'm not changing rules on the fly. Yeah. It was documented on paper, and I can show it. I brought receipts as to how it was supposed to run. we'll plan to do more of that next Saturday. I'm just super, super excited about that. I feel like I'm forgetting things I meant to say about it. You know, one of the game is all D6s, right? Mm-hmm. So I think one of the things that helped was I do have these, you know, casino style D6s, and I do feel like the pips, right? The standard traditional pips on a D6 are super visible on camera. Right, as compared to like D20s or D8s or something like that. So I felt it worked very well to have a purely D6-based game mm-hmm. on a stream, because I think that was very visible on the tabletop, which was great. And I will say that in addition to Isabel's great acting and graphic design, she has started doing puppetry on YouTube lately. And if you want to see more of Isabel doing puppetry, you can look for Cow and COVID-19 on YouTube, which is equally entertaining and completely unique and not a style of humor I think anybody else would come up with. But you can look for more of Isabel on YouTube there.
Excellent. Yep. you know, for your Book of War games, I guess my next suggestion, if you want to take your production value up another notch, is you need like confessional videos of you and Isabel maybe during selection. Right, so after you select your armies, each of you privately films a little video of yourself explaining why you chose what you chose. Work that into the show.
That kind of accidentally happened at one point. Oh, we can totally expand on it. There is a point, actually, when we are selecting armies and I leave the room to go get extra miniatures, and Isabel totally turns to the camera, right? And now I know this because right after the show, I sat down and I watched the whole show all over again for 2 hours, and I was so, and then I almost watched it a third time. I came really close to watching the same show just back to back for 6 hours straight, right? But now I know that when I walked out of the room, Isabel turns the camera and she says, "I really need to get an army that's going to really crush Dan. I don't think that will be too difficult," right? And then I walk in and she goes, "Shh, nobody repeat that." I said that.
That's great. I think it would be interesting, yeah. Right? A little, or possibly even a debrief at the end, right? A little, yeah. Maybe you're already doing that. I haven't actually watched it yet. So the funny thing is, of course, I was posting links to our show to our Discord channel to tell everyone we were going to be having this conversation today, last night after I finished my own game. And I clicked the link to make sure it worked, and I saw you and Isabel. I was like, yeah. Wait, what? And it was just, I had logged in just in time to see you both say goodnight. Like, all right, goodnight. I'm like, what? Ah, I missed it.
I wish I'd given you a little bit more heads up about that, because we were thinking about that this week. And, you know, I was busy with work, and then it came on Saturday. I'm like, I'm going to make this happen. We're going to finally make this happen. And I emailed you at a point where you were already engaged in games all day long. Yeah. So I wish I'd given you more heads up about that, but it worked fine. It worked very well.
It's just I'll add to my queue to watch the VOD at some point when I have the time.
There, I will say there are a couple bad words. So as things get more frantic, I'm going to say I was considering that I might have to go on check the box for this is not kid friendly, possibly, because some bad words start to get used at some point.
Excellent. Okay, so back to, let's just wrap this up, I guess, a tech and virtual cons, and any final thoughts there on running a virtual convention or running a game online?
Well, you might have more, like for the convention, you might have more opinion about what I do. So do you think you would, like if you were to run another or a larger convention, would you make it more formalized next time?
That's a really good question. I would at least formalize the stages, the major stages of now is when you submit games to run, when you do sign up, right? Yeah. I think I would formalize that part more because I think people need deadlines. Yeah.
And that's how you normally run the con, right? So everything you just said is just your normal standards for running the con that had to get voided on this particular cycle.
Yeah, I think I was trying to be too flexible there of like, well, I don't know what people's schedules are and I don't know what, you know. It's similar to my major advice always of scheduling logistics around any role-playing game, whether it's a one-shot you're running for friends or a regular campaign or whatever, is that my experience is it's way better to just pick a time and say, this is when we're playing, who can come, than to address a group and say, when's good for everybody?
Yeah.
You address the group, you say, when's good for everybody, and it's just going to devolve into chaos and nothing's going to happen. Whereas if you say, we're definitely playing Thursday at 6, who can come? It'll either work or not work. And if it doesn't work, then you can go, okay, I guess that didn't work. We're going to play Friday at 7. Who can come then, right? And just keep doing it until you succeed. I think that works way better than, you know, trying to find out when's good for everyone.
I think that's good advice. And again, it's, you know, the DM should be running a system that they're excited about. The DM should be running at a time that's really, really good for them to be mentally present.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think that's good advice.
Yeah, I that's the way I would do it. And I would, again, I would, you know, formalize the submission period. Yeah, I think you're right, actually. Now, thinking back about it, we just didn't have enough time between when it was concepted to when it was going to happen to actually do all those stages of now submit your games. And a little bit, you got to, as an organizer, you got to bang the drum, right? You got to be like, well, we don't have enough games. I've got like 38 people on the Discord channel. Right. They all want to play games, and I've only got 6 on the list. I need more people.
Right. And I will say that you, Paul, I mean, you start, this whole process takes like about 8 months. Like, I feel like you start somewhere between 6 and 8 months is when you start the beginning of your normal con development.
It is my goal to have like, are you coming or not commitments by the end of December.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And then we're playing in April.
Right. Right. And so you're making shout-outs. I mean, you're making shout-outs of you can register now 2 months before that. Like, it starts in November, October, November.
Yep.
So switching from that to about 2 weeks is like there's no
doomed to failure, huh?
yeah. And I would have made like, because I was also thinking, well, we need like at the normal in person thing. We need formalized times because we're limited on rooms. Like, there's only three and a half rooms we can physically use for games.
Right.
So you've got to have formalized, like, who has which table at a particular time. And I would have thought, oh, now I can just get rid of that.
I think my gut says that with a virtual convention, you can break rules on how many people to invite and how many games to run simultaneously, because who cares? It's all virtual.
Yeah.
That said, I guess I would double down on it. I would say, yes, invite way more people, because half of them are going to like flake and not do a thing.
Yeah.
So, right, my experience, I had, you know, close to 40 people, and how many of them actually even played a game over the weekend? Less than half of that, I would say.
So. Understood. And at the same time, I could see it possibly being fragmented. Like, if you had so many games, you know, like too many games created, and then you have like 2 players in each, you know, people are going to be disappointed for a variety of reasons. So I can see possible.
Yeah, I think a lot of the logistics of HelgaCon work because we're all shoved into a common space together, you know, all trapped in a house for the weekend. I would change a bunch, I think, for a virtual con.
And at the moment, your favorite, like, software setup to run a game would, in general, would be what?
I think it depends highly on the game, to be honest. Depends highly on the demands of the game. If I need a lot of different stuff, like when we get into outdoor spoliation, which is as close to just how I run D&D as I can get, right? Yep. When I'm just running D&D at my table, I've got furniture devoted to like stuff to be within reach, so I can just, oh, I need this one, I need that, I need this, right? So in that case, I want probably quote-unquote the simplest setup of just video, but I want multiple cameras. I went just video chat with multiple cameras so I can like grab whatever I need and shove it on the table and go, okay, now there's this. Okay, now there's this. Yeah. Whereas something like Fiasco, I really enjoyed having Roll20 available so that we could have shared space, right? Like we have when you need shared tokens that we control and, okay, I'm giving you a die and now you have to roll it and then you give the die to somebody else, then I need some kind of shared virtual tabletop space.
And I can see a big distinction between a game like Fiasco that makes a philosophical point of everybody is equal and there isn't one star DM versus D&D that does have an auteur, you know, expected to run the show, with a bunch of stuff on their side.
I'm not sure what I would choose if I was running like very traditional battle mat D&D, right? If I'm running D&D where we're going to have a lot of miniatures on the board and move them around, at that point, I don't know. I'm really torn between just have a physical thing and point a camera at it and you tell me where you want to move and I'll move you versus, you know, a full-on virtual tabletop.
Yep, gotcha.
Ultimately, probably the best thing is whatever you're comfortable with, right? Practice a couple of times, and then once you know how the system works, it's going to go more smoothly for you.
Makes sense.
I had one more point. What was it? Nope, it's lost. Oh, wait, I have it. There you go. Sorry.
Good.
Recovered it really quickly. The Tabletop Events Convention that happens at the end of May, I think May 23rd, 24th, something like that. You and I are planning on running some stuff at that, correct?
Yes. Excellent. Yes, we are now.
Excellent. So look for that. We're planning on running some games at that to entice folks to to come and play and for our own personal enjoyment.
And the player's detriment.
Yeah. Specifically, just to tease it a little bit more, specifically, there's a game we've run at conventions called Boss Fight for Breakfast. We'll probably run at least one game of that. So there's a potential there for you to play in a co-DM'd game with Dan and Paul as DMs. Dan being the adversary and I playing the referee.
Which is great, and we enjoy, and the players usually get a lot of energy out of it. So yeah. We would please join us if you can get in there at the tabletop events. Con of Champions, right? Is that what they're calling it?
Yep. You just go to tabletop.events, you'll find it.
Yep. Very good. Looking forward to that.
Great. If you have any thoughts on how to run a virtual convention or how to run a game at a virtual convention, please share your thoughts with us here in the comments. We'd love to hear from you. Dan and I think we'll be continuing to do this, continuing to explore and share our own experiences and advice with everyone. So we'd love to hear from you. If there's stuff that we're overlooking, please point us in the right direction. We'd love to do that.
We want to see that, totally. And do remember that you can like and follow and subscribe to us on YouTube and Twitter and Twitch by the handle Wandering DMs on all of those sites.
Also, our show is available always on audio-only podcast format, if you prefer that style. You can get those on our website at wanderingdms.com. Or various podcast carriers such as iTunes or Google Podcasts. If you are listening to us on one of those carriers, please take a moment to rate and review us. That really helps us and helps others find our show.
It totally does. Thanks to everybody that commented on the show today. Actually, that was like super helpful to have that conversation going on. And as always, thanks incredibly to the patrons of our show that make what we do possible. We couldn't do this without you. If you would like to join our patrons in supporting the show, please visit patreon.com/wanderingdms. And we would really appreciate that. We are live every Sunday at 1 p.m. Eastern time still. We have shows throughout the week. We have we now have, what, 4 shows a week or something like that. Look for the Tuesday night basic solo play with Paul and myself. Look for 10 Dead Rats on Thursday. Look for Dan and Isabel's Book of War playtest on Saturday night coming up this week. We don't have a whole heck of a lot else to do at the moment, so that we're filling the airwaves with D&D and wargaming on Wandering DMs here. But the chat show is Sunday at 1 p.m. Eastern time, so please, we hope that you'll join us again next week for another thought-provoking discussion.
We'll see you then.